Stephanie. I've been at Bethel School of Ministry for the past 2 years, and it's really nice to be home and be back speaking again. And I just wanted to share a bit about like what God's been doing this year in me. Last year I spoke about what I'd learned in first year, this year what it was that I learned in second year. And when I first went back to Bethel, I kind of did like a self-assessment of how my first year went, almost like a progress interview on myself, and just looked at like what I did well, where I could have improved, that sort of thing. And I realized that I'd loved it and I'd learned a lot, but I'd stayed inside this comfort zone for the year. And there'd been things that I wanted to do, but I didn't because I was a bit scared of it. One of those things being auditioning for the worship team. So the way they do it out there is it's like X Factor style. So it's a room full of people, about this many people, but then there's a panel of judges, about five or six. And my first year out there, I was like, there's no way you will get me doing anything like that. Never. Won't do it. I was just terrified. Terrified of the person that was in charge of first year worship. Just didn't want to go anywhere near it. And I just thought, no. And I told people, it's just not my year. Not my year to do it. It's all right. I'll do it eventually. So I went back this year. And during first year, I'd had loads of prophetic words. Like every week, someone was coming up to me and saying, do you sing? And I was like, At the beginning, I was like, sort of. Like, I dabble. And then as the year went on, I would just say, yes, I do. Yes, I sing. And as it was happening so often, like, I would just laugh in people's faces when they come up to me and said, do you sing? Because I was just like, this is just stupid how many times people are saying it to me. And like, I loved it, but it was never something I considered doing as ministry. You know, I loved the preaching. And is this still working? Yeah. I loved the preaching, I loved the praying for people, but singing and leading worship, leave that up to my dad, because that's what he does, and I was happy enough to leave it like that. But this year I was like, no, I've had loads of prophetic words, I need to give this a shot, I need to just do it. And it was more like, I don't really care whether I get on the team, but I need to face this fear, because this is taking over my life, like just allowing fear to stop me from doing things. And if I've got these prophetic words and these words that say, this is what I'm supposed to do, then I need to face this. And even if it's just a no, okay, not for me, then fine. But so I went and I put my name down and then was getting ready, like practicing every day, doing harmonies and stuff, because I was only going for background vocals. And got to the day of and couldn't find a lift. So I was like, oh, right, okay, God doesn't want me to do it this year, obviously, because I can't find a lift to the auditions, and that's fine, like, another excuse. And then a couple of hours before the audition, someone was like, no, no, you can come with me. I was like, great, yeah, really good. So I showed up, sat and watched about 20 or 30 people go, and then they called my name, got up there, and you sing a couple of songs, sing harmony on the chorus of them, and then sit down afterwards. And I just, someone said, so what did you think? And I was just like, I did it. That's all that matters. I did it. And they were like, so do you think you'll get on? I was like, I don't even care. I just did that. It doesn't matter whether I get on the team. And that was it. Like, I didn't get on the team. But for me, it was like, I broke through. I faced that fear. And that was it for the rest of the year. Every time something came up that scared me, I was just like, right, let's do it, because I'm not allowing fear to get in the way. And so I've just been thinking a lot about that, facing fear and what it looks like. And I've been reading Matthew 14. So it's a story that we all know. But the context for it is the disciples have spent the whole day, it's the feeding of the 5,000, they've spent the whole day giving out loaves and fishes and trying to make it work, stressful, stressful situation, thousands of people that they have to serve. And they just get to the end of the day and people still want more. They're still hungry for more. So Jesus is like, you get on the boat and go, I'll get everybody to leave. So then this is what happens. They get in the boat and they fall asleep, because you would, after a stressful day, long day, you just go to sleep. And in the middle of the night, The disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them, walking on water. Now, I'll stop here. So, you're pretty tired. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're trying just to get this storm to stop, or you're just trying to keep the boat afloat. You're doing something to try and just stay above water. And then suddenly, like, you can imagine, it's kind of like if you wake up in the middle of the night with your car alarm going off. You just go through the motions to get it done. You go back to bed, you wake up the next morning, you go, did that really happen? Because you're just so exhausted in the moment that you do whatever you need to do. So I feel like this is where they're at. They're just going through the motions, get us across this water, just go for it, just get there. And then Jesus just comes walking across the water, and they're just like, what? Is that what? What is that? So they're like, So when the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, it's a ghost. But Jesus spoke to them at once. Don't be afraid, he said. Take courage. I am here. Then Peter called to him, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you, walking on the water. Yes, come, Jesus said. So, they're in this position. They've seen Jesus do this before. This isn't the first time that Jesus calms a storm for them. You know, they've been out on the boat before and Jesus was with them that time. And he actually was with them and calmed it and still said to them, where's your faith? You know, you need your faith for this. This is the second time. So I feel like Jesus decides to step it up a notch. You know, I was with you the last time, so let's see how you do with me not with you. I'll walk across the water towards you. So that's what happens, and it raises their level of faith again. It's like, wow, like, if that's really you. And so Peter decides, I'm just going to be a bit more, you know, test the water sort of thing, and decides to say, if that's really you, then I want to go out and meet you. And he steps out of the boat and steps onto the water. So I feel like that was like me. It was like, I had not faced fear. I had allowed myself to stay in the boat, stay comfortable, and I could handle as much as was in front of me. But God was saying, you need to step outside the boat to see the next thing. You know, I had seen so much happen in my life in first year. I'd seen God move incredibly, like loads of testimonies of personal change in me. But God was saying, here's the next step. What are you going to do? Are you going to step it up, or are you going to stay inside the boat? Because he'll look after you. You stay there, you can. But he wants to know, are you ready for the next step? So how do you face it? How do you face the fear in your life? Well, I know that there are people that fear comes from a place of you've been hurt before, that something's happened. And I totally understand that. I've been there. Like, someone hurts you, something falls apart that you don't even see coming. These things happen, and I believe that those things, they need inner healing. They need you to go to God. They need you to just forgive yourself, forgive other people, and just deal with the inner hurt of that before you can start to move on. And I get that. But today I want to focus on when you're ready. When you're ready for the next step, how do you face it? And I think it's to face it face on. You know, I read this book, Heavy Rain, this year. And Chris Vallotton says in the book, the dogs of doom stand at the door of your destiny. And it just blew me away. I think it became my, like, saying for the year every time I faced fear. And it's like, where's your destiny? And what's stopping you from getting to it? Because we're all called to do something, to play a part, and the devil's going to try really hard to stop you from facing, from getting to that destiny. And it's recognizing what it is that's getting in the way and facing it. For me, it was the audition, you know, just doing it. But for you, it's something else. There's something in your life, and you really want it. There's a dream, there's something, and it takes to step out of the boat. And I think it's like, I'm reminded of the Israelites and the Promised Land. You know, they searched for 40 years, walked for 40 years to find the Promised Land. But there were still giants in the promised land once they got there. There's still things they had to face. And it's those things that we need to face and be able to say, I'm going to step out. I'm not going to allow that thing to get in the way of me reaching my destiny. It says in Joshua 1, verse 9. Just find it. You know, Joshua is about to walk into the promised land, and God's kind of given him a wee pep talk about how he sees him and how he sees this going. And he says, this is my command. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. We need to be strong and courageous. We need to face our fears, face on, full on, going into it, battling, because sometimes it is a battle. Sometimes you'll walk straight into it and it'll all work out fine. Other times there's a fight and we need to be prepared to step up. So once we realize how we do it, then there's always that question of why? Why should I step out of my comfort zone? Why should I take this next step, you know? And I think for me, it was like, I want to get to the end of my life, look back on it and go, I did everything that I wanted to do, that I could have done, you know. I want to go to God and be like, yeah, I'm really proud of the fact that I stepped out and I took every opportunity and prayed for the people that you wanted me to pray for and did everything, you know. And like, I do have things where I'm like, oh, I don't really want to do that. But I still want to be able to go, no, I'm going to step out this time. I'm going to go pray for that person on the street. We were in Nice on holiday a couple of weeks ago, and there was this man every day that walked down the beach, and he had all his Coke and his coffee and everything, and you could buy it off him, and every day I seen him, and I was like, oh, like, I really want to do something to help him. And I don't speak a word of French, like nothing, like studied Spanish at school and Irish, so there's no French, like I couldn't go up and have a conversation with him. And so I was just like, what do I do? How do I help this man? And every day he would walk past and I'd go, oh, he's gone, you know, he's gone, it's all right. And he would come back the next day. And then I was sitting in the water one day with my dad, and I told him just how I was feeling and just seeing this man, and I just wanted to help him. And he's like, why don't you just go buy something off him? And I was like, oh, well, I'm in the water, so it's fine. Like, I can't go right now. But the next day, he came on the beach again. And so I was like, right, I have to do it. Like, I have to go and talk to him. And so I went up and I just bought a Coke, and he didn't speak any English, I didn't speak any French, so it was just kind of like, here you go, like, thank you. Like, I was speaking Spanish, I was like, gracias and all this stuff. I was like, please don't, no, what am I doing? And it was just like, you know, in that circumstance, I had 5 days and he was there every day, so I could go back. But I know there's been times as well when I've seen a woman who tells me about her knee injury, and I'm like, this is such an opportunity to pray for her, and I don't do it. I'm just like, ugh. Like, I just, the fear of it gets in the way. But I'm now learning, you know, this year, it's like, you just have to grab that and go, right, I'm not going to allow the devil to get in the way of my destiny. You know, my vision for Belfast, Northern Ireland, Ireland, you know, is to see people get healed, to see the streets full of people that have been ministered to and that have been touched by God. But if I can't do it on my own, then how can I expect, like, a room full of people to do it? And so I need to grab that, because the devil's going to try and tell me that you can't do that. Who do you think you are? That person's going to laugh in your face when you tell them that. And you're like, well, okay. And it's like, no, actually, what I've actually seen happen is when I go up and talk to someone, they're really open. They're actually really, like, wanting to be healed. they're just as annoyed about having a like sore knee as you are about watching them with it. And it's like, you just have to take that step and just go, I'm not allowing this. Just take a hold of me. I'm going to step out. And so, yeah, I was looking at the story of the talents in Matthew 25. So if you want to turn there. Because I feel like this is relevant as well, you know, for stepping out of our comfort zone. Says, again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. He gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities. He then left on his trip. The servant who received the 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earned 5 more. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work and earned 2 more. But the servant who received the 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. After a long time, their master returned from his trip and called them to give an account of how they had used his money. The servant to whom he had entrusted the five bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you give me 5 bags of silver to invest and I have earned 5 more. The master was full of praise. Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. The servant who had received the 2 bags of silver came forward and said, Master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest, and I have earned 2 more. The master said, Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. Then the servant with the 1 bag of silver came and said, Master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. Look, here is your money back. But the master replied, You wicked and lazy servant, if you knew I harvested crops I didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it. Then he ordered, take the money from this servant and give it to the one with the 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. Now throw this useless servant into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Ignore that last verse, it's a bit bad. I've been struck recently by how much I've learned, you know, we all know this stuff, you know, we all know that Jesus healed the sick, that he opened blind eyes, that he opened deaf ears, and that is our ministry here on earth. We know all of this. We've been given that power within us. And if it just stays there, all it does is gather dust. It doesn't do anything. We don't do anything. But we actually have to step it up and just go, I've been given this. And I know this is about the talents, but I think the same principle applies. We've been given this ability. God, the Holy Spirit is within us, and he wants us to move and use and be with him every day and to work in his ministry every day. And that looks like stepping out. It looks like praying for that colleague in work who you know is so depressed that needs just some hope, giving them a prophetic word, an encouraging word to help them with their week. That's what it looks like. And I think so much of the time, it's very nice to stay in the comfort zone. And I do it. I know I do it. But I also want more. And I think everyone in here wants more. We want more from life. We want to see these incredible things that we're hearing about that are happening all over the world, but it involves us doing something. And if I come back here after having 2 years of ministry training, and I just go back to working in River Island, which is where I was before I left Northern Ireland, and just go back into that, work 60 hours a week, and kind of forget about it, it's like, what was the point? What was God investing in? And I think it's the same every week. You're hearing an encouraging word. There's something coming from here, and it's like even Andrew earlier praying for the sick, you know, that is the ministry of this church, of each person in here. It's to see people's lives changed by God and by healing. And if we don't start here and we don't take it out there, then it's not doing any use, you know. And that's what I've been challenged by. So what about the doubt? What about the times that you step out and it doesn't happen? Well, I've experienced a lot of that. Over the 2 years, you start off, you're not allowed to do any ministry at Bethel, and then you fill in an application form after you've had the training and everything, and you're allowed to do ministry in the church at the end of first year. So that's where I started. And then in second year, you're allowed to take ministry trips, so you can take it to other parts of America or across the world, wherever you end up. And so over the course of the last year and a half, I guess, since I started doing the ministry, at the beginning, it was awful. Like, I would stand at the front of the church, and it was scary for me at that point. I was like, what am I supposed to do when someone comes up to me? And I would pray for them, and nothing would happen. They would actually, like, especially at conferences, people come from across the world because they want to be healed. They've heard of what's happening at Bethel, and they're expecting it to happen as soon as you pray for them. And it was time and time and time again that it just didn't happen. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Because obviously God wants to heal. I know the truth. God is healer. So it's me. There's something I'm not doing right. But I became discouraged. I became like, why am I doing this? I don't want to do another conference because I don't want to stand there and disappoint all these people. But I chose to keep going. I chose to keep praying because I was like, I know the truth. I know what God is saying, what his truth is. He is healer. Every single one of these people, he wants to heal. And I don't even know whether they go away, wake up the next morning, and it's completely gone. I don't know that. All I know is what I'm seeing in front of me. So I kept praying and kept going. And eventually, just one conference, I don't even know what happened. Don't know whether God just decided, yep, it's going to happen. But this one conference, I prayed for four ladies in a row who all had neck injuries, all gone. And I was just like, wow, this is amazing. Like, what am I doing? Wow. And I was just like pumped. And the rest of the year, I just kept going for it. And it was like, the bigger the thing was, the better. Like, I just wanted to see it happen. And I went to South Africa. So I decided, as part of my fear, getting over fear thing, I was going to go to South Africa. So I was like, I've heard everything happens there. That's where the miracles are, you know. Every year from mission trips, testimonies come back from South Africa. So I was like, right, this is the place to go. I'm going to see things happen. And after the year I'd had, I kept challenging myself for the next thing. And one of my dreams had been to see the blind eyes open.